time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, and we'll start by talking about a game that I remember well. I know Dave was there, I was there, and we could barely see. Nobody could see anything, could they, Anna?
I'm so interested to hear what Dave has to say. The Fog Bowl, I've only seen it from the video, and it's known as the greatest playoff game that no one really saw, because even the players on the field said that they were interviewed later and said, you know, we really couldn't even make out where the ball was at times. It was just a little crazy. The Bears playing the Philadelphia Eagles, so bizarre, because, and Dave will recall this, it started out clear conditions, it was sunny, and it looked like it was just going to be a beautiful game day for a football game. Then out of nowhere, that blanket of fog moved in. Were you in the broadcast booth, Dave? Because I've heard all kinds of stories about what you could and couldn't see from up there.
I was working. Wayne Larrivee was doing the game here on WGN, and we're all up there in the booth, and it was as I remember it, Anna, it kind of happened somewhat suddenly, where, you know, it went from being this really beautiful day on the lakefront, and then all of a sudden we're looking in, and this shroud of fog comes in, and it got so bad that you really could not see the field. This was before Soldier Field had been redone the last time, right? So we're looking down at the field, and you can't see anything.
Yeah, well, did you see me in the stands? You see me in the stands, Dave?
I did see you, Bob. I thought that was great, having the flair. But
well, you had that hair back then. You could see that, make that up
right.
from far away, Bob.
But we went down to the field. A couple of us went down to the field, and we tried to send information up to the booth. But really, even on the sidelines, you couldn't see that much. It was eerie, because these players would come out of the fog to get over to the bench.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like Field of Dreams coming out of the corn.
Exactly. You know, it's before sideline reporters, too, so that makes sense. You'd go down there to try to tell the guys upstairs what was happening. It just was ridiculous to try to, you know, talk about that game and not be able to see anything. Other interesting thing before we play this audio clip we pulled is that it only covered, the fog moved in, as you said, very quickly, Dave, and it only covered about 15 city blocks total. So people watching the game at home were, like, looking out the window, like, what's going on? And then looking at their TV screen, you couldn't see anything. Kind of crazy. We did pull some audio from that game. Just precious. I just love this stuff. Let's listen in.
A full house by the shores of Lake Michigan, Soldier Field, Chicago, for this NFC divisional playoff encounter between the Eagles of Philadelphia and the Chicago Bears.
It wasn't like, you know, the weather report was for fog. No, the fog just kind of rolled in.
We can't see anything beyond 10 feet.
It's not smoke, it's fog.
The thing about the fog bowl, that is just bizarre. There was a noon start. It showed up about 1:15. And by 4:15, it was gone.
The weather was fine when we were warming up and everything. The fog came off the lake, what they call lake effect. I don't know why. I don't know why it didn't go up to the Hancock Building. I didn't create it. Buddy didn't create it. It just happened. Nature created, God created, whatever you want to call. It was a very strange occurrence.
Hey, at least the Bears won. It was this week in 1988. It was December 31.
And we think they won. Yeah.
Yeah. We're still trying to confirm
it's
that.
It's good to know Mike Ditka did not create the fog. Or Buddy Ryan. I didn't realize that. I thought they did it.
Let's talk about something Chicago is famous for, pinball.
Yeah, so much, so many contributions in the pinball world from Chicago, invented in Chicago. Started in 1931, Chicagoans were responsible for creating the first game called pinball, the first coin-operated pinball machine, first one using bumpers and the first one using flippers, so basically the entire game, really the full evolution of pinball. It was based, you know, Bob, on this European game called Bagatelle. It was like a wooden box, and you'd hit this ball around kind of with a cue stick, sort of like pool, like a mini pool table. But when some Chicago inventors, like toy inventors and game inventors, got a hold of it, they kind of reinvented what it was, and it became so popular. You could say it was, you know, what launched video arcades eventually, and the video game phenomenon that became so popular. Pinball machines started to be everywhere, entertainment venues, concert venues, restaurants, bars, that kind of thing. And it would originally cost you a penny to play the pinball machine when it started to be coin operated. A lot of local legislators were moving in to say, well, wait a minute, that's gambling. And they tried to ban them, but, you know, that didn't happen. And the pinball machine's still around, I'm told. People are still, mm-hmm. still like the pinball machine. There was some kind of resurgence of it in the last 10 or so years. So
just remember, if you try to lift it or, press against it, tilt.
Right. That was the greatest invention of all time, that they could tell when you tilted the pinball machine. But, you lost your turn for that.
This week in Chicago history, and our city got the name Hog Butcher to the world based on what happened Christmas Day 160 years ago. Anna, fill us in.
That's right, Bob. This is when it all started. The Chicago Stockyards were born on the south side over at Halsted and 35th Street. Became the central place for animal slaughter, I guess. Yeah, sounds horrible, but that's what happened there. That is what happened. Animals destined for dinner tables were sent there, and it became the centralized place. Here's the way the story goes. The powerful railroad company stepped in, and they noticed that hundreds of small stockyards were spread out across the Midwest, and they wanted one centralized location here in Chicago, where they had a lot of rail transit, a lot of intersections of railways. Then they could ship product out anywhere in the country. So they decided that this was the spot. They bought up the land there, 35th and Halsted, and established the Union Stockyards. And at its peak, they were moving 15 million animals into the Union Stockyards every year. Of course, things changed over time, and refrigeration techniques and all kinds of things, and they just it fell out of favor. 1971 is when the Union Stockyards closed, but that was the origin. Christmas Day, 1865.
Chicago is the Union Stockyards, as Frank Sinatra sang, and I think you could smell the meat until about 20 years ago.
Only imagine.
this is a part of Chicago history I was not aware of. Tell us about the genesis of Lincoln Logs.
You know, Bob, this one freaked me out, too. I was so surprised to see this. You know, often when I'm doing research for these segments, I come across these things and I go, whoa, does everyone know this? Did you know that Lincoln Logs, the popular kids' building toy for generations, was invented by not only a Chicagoan, but by the son of Frank Lloyd Wright, the world-renowned architect. It kind of makes sense when you think about it, but it just, I didn't know that, and I think maybe a lot of people didn't. John Lloyd Wright, grew up five siblings in Oak Park with his famous architect dad. One of the stories goes, with so many brothers and sisters around, they kept knocking down his building blocks, and so he wanted ones that locked into place, and so that was the part of the genesis. But then there's another story too that makes a lot of sense. He accompanied his dad to Japan, where his dad was heavily influenced and inspired by Japanese architecture. And he saw when they were building these earthquake-proof wooden temples and homes that they did this special way, this design. They used a special design where they did lock in place. And that was one of the inspirations for how he built his Lincoln Logs. So he created them. He launched a toy company, Red Square Toys. And his first big order came from Marshall Fields. Pretty cool story.
Mm-hmm. They still make them today, don't they?
Still making them today. Toy Hall of Fame, National Toy Hall of Fame.
And if we were still in the 1980s, Anna, I'd invite you to lunch over at the Ground Round later this afternoon.
Am I the only one who totally remembers this jingle? I'm going to play it in a second here, but I remember these restaurants so much. Launched in Chicago by Howard Johnson's The Motel Company. They started this restaurant chain and really tested it out and expanded it. Super popular in the Chicago area. A family-friendly place, and it was they featured a roaming mascot, Bingo the Clown. I don't remember that so much, but they also had big movie screens for kids, and they gave out free peanuts, and they let kids throw the shells on the floor. So it was totally a kid-friendly place where kids would beg your parents to go there before Chuck E. Cheese even existed. So here's the ad jingle. Listen in here. See if this one brings back any memories.
Good news today at the Ground Round.
You get a whole lot more at the Ground Round. You get a whole lot more.
What's the good news?
USDA Choice Top Sirloin Steak, just $3.99.
That's good news.
And new Golden Fried Clams, also $3.99.
More good news.
Try our baked lemon butter scrod, just $3.99.
That is good news.
Steak, clam, scrod, just $3.99 each at participating Ground Round.
At the Ground Round, you get a whole lot.
And they started in Chicago in 1967, didn't they?
Yeah. Expanded to 200 restaurants. And I think there's still a few around now, today. I'd have to confirm that, but I heard that some franchisees bought up the remainders.
And we have one more oldie but goodie in the food department, don't we?
So much food history, Bob. You and I talk about this a lot, but Poppin' Fresh Pies is another one that may ring a bell for a lot of folks. I loved these pies as a kid. I remember they had a location on Northwestern in Rogers Park in my neighborhood, and we loved the pies. It was this home cooking kind of restaurant, again, super popular. Let's pull that ad real quick, play that one. See, I don't know if this one is as memorable, but Poppin' Fresh sure is.
Poppin' Fresh.
At Poppin' Fresh, our pies begin with a flaky pastry crust. Then we fill our crust right to the brim and top it off with all kinds of delicious.
Where great pies are.
And when Poppin' Fresh pies are done, the cooking's just begun.
Poppin' Fresh, where great pies are, just the beginning.
Just remember to return the pie tin, right?
Those pie tins are worth some money now, Bob. Apparently, there's an aftermarket for Baker's Square pie tins. Baker's Square took over Poppin' Fresh. And they'll fetch you over about $15 on eBay if you have one of those lying around the house. You might want to look into that for a couple of those.
Yeah, somebody just waking up now hearing the commercials for Poppin' Fresh pies in the ground round, wondering what year this is. I hope nobody's making any meal plans based on what they're hearing here on This Week in Chicago History.
God, I love those pies, though. Oh, I just love them.
Anna DeVlantis, we'll talk again next Wednesday.
Thanks, Bob.